Part 2. Alienation. Chapter 6. Mick crouched low in the E-basement stairwell of Salisbury High, peering through the crack of a door held ajar by the toe of his sneaker, his eyes fixed upon another doorway halfway down the shiny black-tiled corridor stretching before him. The door opened, and a lone student emerged amid the buzz of an electric saw, shutting the door behind him before walking down the hall. Mick checked the time on his phone and smiled as Craig passed through a men's room door at the far end of the hallway, right on schedule for his 10 o'clock smoke break. The hurricane lieutenant slipped out of the stairwell and down the corridor behind his adversary, glancing through the window of the woodshop door at the students working industriously on their projects. He continued onward to the far end of the hallway, stopping at a door stenciled "Men" before slamming it open against its rubber backstop. Craig whirled about with a cigarette cupped in his hand and a puff of gray smoke rising conspicuously over his head. He raised an eyebrow as he recognized Mick and flicked the butt into a nearby urinal.
"What's up?"
he muttered as he stepped toward the door. Mick blocked his exit with a straight arm against the wall.
"Long time no see."
Craig backed up a step.
"Hey, Mick. No hassle, okay? School's off limits, remember?"
Mick nodded slowly.
"Oh yeah, I remember. It's all a part of the truce, right? We wouldn't want to break the truce."
Craig shrugged as he slipped toward the bathroom door.
"Hey, Craig."
Craig tilted his head toward Mick, but Mick tilted it back with a right cross flush to his jaw, leveling the tornado leader to the grimy bathroom floor. He rolled onto his back to see Mick hovering over him with wild eyes and a crazed grin.
"Consider that a formal invitation. Wednesday night, behind the stores. We fight."
Craig slid back against a nearby wall and dabbed a finger on his bloody lip.
"How you doing Hollister's dirty work?"
"I'm covering for him, and I could care less about all the diplomatic crap. Know what I mean?"
"Hey, then why don't you just shoot me right here?"
"Great idea."
Mick drew the pistol from beneath his jacket and shoved it under Craig's chin.
"Say please."
Craig squirmed back against the wall.
"I can't believe you brought that to school."
Mick drew the gun away.
"Wednesday night. Bring your friends. Especially Curly."
"I don't even know where he is."
Mick tucked the gun away and stepped toward the door.
"Liar. Tell him I'll be waiting for him. In fact, he's the guest of honor."
Craig sat up against the wall and straightened his collar.
"Hey, Mick."
"What?"
"We're all gonna miss you on Thursday."
Mick laughed and yanked the restroom door open, letting it slam against the wall again as he stepped out into the corridor, leaving Craig to nurse his bloody lip on the bathroom floor. Clad only in white underwear and a powder blue dress shirt, Jeff stood before a closet door mirror as he fastened the buttons from his neck to his waist. He brushed back the damp strands of hair hanging before his eyes and inspected a fresh cut he had inflicted on his chin with a shaver, wiping the excess blood on a towel before tossing it beside a crisp pair of navy blue slacks laid out at the foot of the bed. He hadn't worn the slacks all year, but after stepping through each leg and hooking the clasp around his waist, he found that they still fit comfortably. So he took a pair of blue socks from the dresser drawer and returned to the bed to put them on. The bed squeaked as he sat upon it, its mattress sagging slightly in the middle beneath his weight, while Jeff stared at the floor for a long moment before loosening the roll of dress socks. "Socks are so hard to put on," he thought, especially with an evening's destination so dreaded. He placed the first sock over his toes, but gave up and fell backward, sprawling across the bed with his head close to the wall beneath the window curtains. Shades of blue surrounded him, from the sky blue walls to the Persian blue carpet to the sapphire curtains ready to engulf him in blueness with the pull of a string. His suit was blue, the house was blue, even his damn car was blue. Blue had always been his favorite color, but now he wondered if he truly cared for the hue at all. The doorbell rang. Cursing and loathing blue socks, He sat up and pulled the first sock over his heel before walking to the bedroom door. He climbed the stairs to the front door and cracked it open, returning downstairs without even looking to see who was outside. Crazy Legs entered the foyer, dressed in a light gray jacket with slacks to match, a crisp white shirt, and a steel gray tie snug against his neck.
"Hey, Jeff,"
he said before shutting the door and following Jeff downstairs into his room.
"How's things?"
"Awful." Jeff glanced back. "Nice suit. You look sharp."
"Thanks. Almost ready to go? Mick's on his way."
"Do I look ready?" Jeff sat back on his bed and held up the second sock. "We're waiting for Cindy. She's coming from field hockey practice."
"Oh."
Jeff pulled on the second sock, eyeing his friend fidgeting in the mirror. "Hope that's all right with you." Crazy Legs turned about.
"Fine with me, Jeff. Not sure if the rest of the gang feels the same way, her being the chief's daughter and all."
Jeff stood up and stepped to the mirror, where he dragged a comb through his damp hair. "Ask me if I care." Crazy Legs wandered to the bed and bounced to a seat on the mattress.
"You really like her, huh?"
Jeff pondered the question as he slid the comb into his back pocket. "Yeah, she's all right." He smiled faintly. "Not exactly the best time for a new girlfriend, know what I mean?"
"We're in it pretty thick, huh?"
Crazy Legs sat up straight with a stern look on his face.
"Look, I gotta talk to you about something before Mick gets here."
"Like what?"
"I'm thinking about taking a break from the Hurricanes."
Jeff reached into the closet again and took out his navy blue tie, calmly running it through his fingers before laying it flat on the dresser. "How come?"
"I just don't like where we're heading. Do you?"
"Of course not. But running away ain't gonna help."
"I'm not running. I'm just..."
Crazy Legs searched for words.
"I'm scared, Jeff."
"So what? We gotta stick together now more than ever."
"Why? To get even? I feel like we're getting sucked down a drain."
Jeff frowned. "So like, forget about train? Let the tornadoes win?" Crazy Legs shook his head.
"Talk to Craig. It's not too late."
"It's way too late. You don't know how it feels to have a friend die in your arms."
"Not yet."
Footsteps clomped outside the bedroom door, and both boys looked up as Mick entered the room. He wore a black pinstripe suit and white tie against a blood-red shirt, his black shoes so polished they glimmered from the overhead light. With every hair in place, each crease in his pants razor-sharp, and a cigarette wedged between his lips, he resembled a picturesque gangster, lacking only a derby for his head and a machine gun for his hands.
"You guys ready or what?"
he asked. "Don't you ever knock?" Jeff replied.
"Sometimes. And sometimes people don't answer, so I just let myself in."
"I didn't hear any knock,"
Crazy Legs said.
"That's what I said! That's what... Oh, forget it."
Jeff reached underneath his bed and pulled out a pair of dust-laden dark blue loafers. "What do you think about these beauties?" Crazy Legs chuckled.
"I think you ought to put them away before anyone else sees them."
Jeff dusted off the shoes with a damp towel before tossing them onto the floor. He had just finished wriggling his feet into them when the doorbell chimed upstairs. "See, Mick? The doorbell works."
"Now, why didn't I think of that?"
"I'll get it."
Crazy Legs darted out of the room. Jeff scooped up the tie off the dresser and threw it to Mick. "Tie this for me."
"You're kidding, right?"
Mick looped the tie around his neck and began to wrap it into a knot.
"You never answered my text yesterday. Did your mother tell you I called here twice?"
Jeff nodded. "She did. I just didn't feel like calling you back." Mick drew back as if insulted, so he patted his friend on the shoulder. "I was avoiding everyone. I was in a black mood."
"Some of the gang went to the park and chucked the frisbee around. It seemed to help them a bit."
"Yeah? Did it help you?" Mick shook his head.
"Only thing that helped me was stuffing my gun in Craig's face at school yesterday morning."
Jeff pulled a navy blue jacket from the closet and laid it on the bed. He stepped back to the mirror and flipped up the collar on his shirt. Now why would you do something like that? Mick slipped the necktie over his head and tossed it to Jeff.
I challenge the Tornadoes to another fight tomorrow night.
Jeff's eyes bulged with disbelief. You what?
The opportunity presented itself, so I took the initiative.
Jeff fumed. Last thing we need right now is another fight. Mick shrugged.
What's the big deal? I thought I was doing you a favor.
Some favor? My ass is already in a sling.
We're all in the same boat, Jeff. I was thinking about Train.
Your timing sucks. They'll probably still be packing the dirt on his coffin.
Good. All the more reason. Let's crush the Tornadoes while we're still hot about it. If we wait, the guys are gonna start getting scared.
Jeff looped the tie over his head and began to adjust it around his collar. They're already scared.
Not yet they aren't. Danny and TJ are all for it.
Well, thanks for telling me before Wednesday. Mick threw his hands up in the air.
What's that supposed to mean?
Don't forget who runs things around here. Jeff paused at the sound of footsteps descending the stairs again. We'll talk later. Not a word of this in front of Cindy. Crazy Legs stepped into the room.
Hey, what's all the commotion?
Nothing. We're just talking about your tie.
Mick shot a glance at Jeff.
What's wrong with it?
Crazy Legs pulled the tie from beneath his jacket and held it to his sleeve.
My mom picked it out.
Cindy slipped into the room behind him, and Jeff's jaw dropped open at the sight of her beauty. Her shoulder-length brown hair, normally combed straight down, was piled atop her head except for a few strands that danced upon the fair skin at the nape of her neck. A black lace shawl covered the thin shoulder straps of a sleek black dress that hugged her slender hips and hung slightly below her knees. Mick looked away after gazing a moment too long, but her eyes quickly focused on Jeff. She twirled about with her arms extended.
What do you think?
He greeted her with a kiss. You look amazing. How about me?
Charming. But your shirt is buttoned wrong.
Mick and Crazy Legs snickered as Jeff turned back to the mirror. After a quick inspection, he fixed the buttons before facing them again. How's that? Mick pointed down.
Great. Now zip up your fly and you'll be all set.
Jeff glanced down and quickly corrected his mindless error. Better?
Much. Are we leaving soon?
Maybe I should run home and get another tie.
Crazy Legs said. Mick pulled him toward the door.
Come on, moron. You want to break your mother's heart?
Jeff watched his friends leave before turning to Cindy. You really do look fantastic. I wasn't just saying that to make you feel good.
Of course not. You wouldn't do something like that.
He pulled the jacket from the bed. That's not what I meant. Why do I always say dumb things around you?
I don't know.
She stepped closer and took the jacket from him.
Maybe you like me.
Her deep brown eyes felt like an old familiar tree to lean upon. He drew her close and held her with gentle strength in his arms. But his words hung heavy in the air as he tried to explain how she made him feel. I'm glad you're here. I haven't had to do this since my father died. She helped him feed his bandaged left hand through his jacket sleeve, although he was able to don the right sleeve on his own.
I'll be right beside you.
She adjusted his jacket to fit his shoulders before straightening his tie.
Who else is going to keep you dressed properly?
He started to reply, but she held a finger to his lips. She took his hand and silently led him out of the bedroom and upstairs to the foyer. They stepped outside to find Mick and Crazy Legs leaning against the Camaro in the driveway, with their shoulders hunched and their hands buried in their pockets, awaiting a ride to a destination as undesirable as it was unavoidable. Jeff squinted into the setting sun as he slowed the Camaro to a crawl, following the line of traffic past a white lawn sign that read, Pinewood Funeral Home. What a zoo, he muttered, eyeing with disdain the stream of cars entering the parking lot. Crazy Legs leaned forward.
Wow, look at all the people.
Mick slid forward to peer out of Cindy's window.
I'll bet half the senior class is here.
Cindy stared in fascination at the bustling funeral parlor.
At least.
Everyone lurched forward when Jeff stomped on the brakes, his face aglow from the red taillights of the car stopped ahead of them. The traffic inched forward again, following the direction of an attendant in a fluorescent orange vest, waving a flashlight toward the parking lot. Jeff ground his teeth as he eased the Camaro forward, scowling at the attendant before turning wide into the lot and nearly grazing his safety vest as they rolled past him. Cindy gasped.
You almost hit him!
Sorry, Jeff mumbled. Mick tapped her on the shoulder.
Was that a cop? Are cops gonna be here tonight?
She looked back at him quizzically.
Why are you asking me? I'm not a cop.
Close enough.
Relax, Mick.
Crazy Leg said.
It was just an attendant.
The line of cars moved more swiftly within the parking lot, guided by another attendant waving them toward an open space in the back row. Jeff gunned the engine in frustration before punching the brakes. The front tires of the Camaro slid over the edge of the pavement and onto the adjacent sod. He switched off the motor and opened his door.
Is he done driving?
Mick asked.
Can I open my eyes now?
Shut up, Jeff snapped, squinting at the setting sun as he stepped out of the car. Cindy climbed out and leaned over the roof of the car.
What's wrong?
He glowered back at her. Nothing. I'm fine. She met him at the rear of the car while his friends clambered out from the back seat.
These things are never easy,
she said softly.
Try to take it in stride and sort it out later.
It's not just the wake, it's everything. Jeff turned to Mick and Crazy Legs standing beside the car, listening inconspicuously. Go on inside. We'll be there in a few minutes.
Sure, Jeff,
Crazy Legs said, and Mick waved a hand as they departed. Cindy watched them walk away.
They look sharp tonight.
He nodded. Kind of weird seeing them dressed up like that. She stepped close to him.
So what's wrong, besides the obvious?
Jeff fell back against the Camaro. You think half these people actually gave a shit about Train when he was alive? Maybe they were in his gym class or had their locker next to his or whatever. So why the hell are they here? She took his hands in hers.
I don't know. Maybe they just want to show they care. Maybe they wanted to be his friend.
He shook his head. This ain't about being friends. It's the social event of the week. They should have stayed home and sent flowers. I wouldn't want them at my wake.
It's not your wake. Don't talk like that.
He slouched against the car. Well, maybe it ought to be.
So what do you want to do? Trade places?
The thought occurred to me.
Well, it's a pretty dumb thought. You don't deserve this any more than he did.
I could have avoided this whole mess if I called off the fight from the beginning.
That's pretty perceptive, but a little late.
Jeff turned away. Don't get cute. I ain't in the mood for it tonight.
I'm sorry that didn't come out right.
She stroked his back.
I just meant that it's easier to say what you should have done after you know the consequences. You know, hindsight.
Her touch eased the tension in his shoulders a bit. Tell me about it. I'd give anything to redo Saturday night. He took her by the hand. Come on, let's get this over with. They strode across the parking lot to a covered walkway that led toward the main entrance of the funeral parlor. To the right of the sidewalk, a small group of teenagers stood on the crisp green lawn, smoking and laughing quietly among themselves, but Jeff silenced them with a scowl as he reached for the golden handle of the dual glass entrance doors. The door slid open before he touched it to reveal a bald man dressed in a pinstriped gray suit and thin leather gloves.
Good evening, sir,
the man said. Jeff grunted in salutation as he led Cindy past the doorman. They walked down a corridor of plush red carpet lit by the soft yellow glow of half-moon torchieres positioned near the ceiling. The sweet smell of fresh-cut flowers grew stronger in the air as they walked past the elegant portraits lining the walls, while a wistful piano nocturne cast a melancholy mood into the corridor through hidden speakers. He recognized various classmates as they approached the corner ahead, some of them downcast and bleary-eyed, and others casting disparaging glances in his direction as they passed. Around the corner, a narrow staircase led some guests down toward a basement lounge, while other mourners chatted softly among themselves beneath the arched entrance of the viewing room. Jeff eyed them skeptically as he stepped through the archway, with Cindy still clinging to his good right hand. Once inside, he turned to survey the room in search of friendly faces with whom Train fought and died. A camaraderie that felt trivialized by such an expansive and unfamiliar crowd. He nervously recited the Hurricane's unifying pledge under his breath. Through thick and thin. Cindy squeezed his sweaty hand.
Did you say something?
Jeff shook his head. He stepped to the rear of the viewing line that began at the archway and extended to the right down the perimeter wall to an open casket surrounded by flowers, photographs, and spectators at the far end of the long room. Guests filled nearly every chair of a 30-row ensemble in the center of the viewing room, and more people lingered about its edges, some speaking in hushed tones and casting surreptitious looks his way. As the line advanced, he spotted Train's parents on the far side of their eldest son's casket, greeting mourners at the end of the viewing line, while Train's little brother, Randy, shuffled and fidgeted in his suit, just 13 years old, and lost in a sea of despair. A lump swelled in Jeff's throat as he watched Mick and Crazy Legs turn away from the casket with bowed heads and sorry eyes. They plodded through the receiving line, shaking hands and conversing briefly with the Armstrong family. Mick patted Randy on the shoulder, but Crazy Legs wandered past them, his puffy red eyes glancing back to the casket one last time. He looked up to Jeff and Cindy and cut across the room in their direction, no longer able to restrain the tears from running down his cheeks. When he reached them, he buried his brow on his leader's shoulder, and his voice cracked as he spoke.
Those bastards!
Jeff patted his friend on the back of his head as Mick crossed the room along the same path. How'd you guys get through the line so fast? He asked his lieutenant.
We cut in on some sophomores. They know I would have pounded them later if they said anything.
Mick leaned closer and whispered,
You should go up front. Someone will let you in. You're Jeff Hollister.
Jeff sensed Cindy's discomfort from the corner of his eye. We're cool. The line's moving pretty good.
Suit yourself. We'll be downstairs.
Mick said before leading Crazy Legs out of the viewing room. Cindy pointed ahead to a blonde girl moving toward the casket.
Shannon's here. I should go see her.
Jeff sensed a dozen eyes turn his way as he stepped out of line to glimpse her friend. No, don't leave me. She nodded and squeezed his hand again as they edged forward. The line moved along steadily, and soon the last two mourners ahead of them turned away from the casket for the Armstrong family receiving line. Jeff felt numb as he stepped forward, his eyes diverting to a collage on his right, strewn with mementos and pictures in honor of his friend's short life. One particular photograph caught his eye, a picture of himself with his arm around Train, flanked by Mick and Crazy Legs, standing beside the freshly painted midnight blue Camaro. He recalled that warm summer morning from 2 years earlier, when Axel had captured the picture shortly before they all piled inside the refurbished car for its inaugural road trip to the beach. Train was right. Those were good times. And now they were gone.
Come, Jeff. It's our turn.
Cindy tugged at his sleeve.
Kneel down.
He had no trouble complying with her direction, for his legs already felt wobbly. He dropped to the kneeler and stared down at the face of his friend, lying silently upon a lacy white pillow with his hands clasped at his waist. Dressed in a fine suit and tie, Train had never appeared as prim as he did now. But Jeff secretly knew he would have balked about being laid to rest in anything but faded jeans and a muscle tee. He longed to chase everyone away, stick a cigarette in his friend's lips and bury him on the edge of the student parking lot where he would surely rest in peace. He leaned forward and tried to muster some kind of prayer, but all he could think of was the memory of his bodyguard dying in his arms in a filthy alley under the cold, pale glare of a lemon spotlight. A child's cry pierced the hush of the room. Jeff cast a scornful look in the direction of the commotion. only to espy two classmates snickering over a joke. He looked away to glimpse a teenage girl in line, chomping on gum and tapping a finger on her phone. "I can't concentrate. It's like a fast food joint in here." Cindy sighed.
"Let's come back when it's quieter."
"Good idea." Jeff stood and patted Train's lifeless arm. "I'll be back, buddy." He stepped away from the casket, following Cindy to the receiving line where Train's parents awaited them. The lump in his throat returned, for the Armstrongs had been a second family to him after his own father's death 8 years earlier. Mrs. Armstrong greeted him with her arms and her eyeliner running slightly onto her cheeks.
"Thank you for coming, Jeff. It's good to see you again."
He hugged her tightly. "I'm still in shock."
"Is this your girlfriend, Jeff?"
Mrs. Armstrong asked with a furtive smile. Jeff's face brightened. "This is Cindy. She's Train's friend, too." Cindy shook her hand gently.
"Please accept my condolences."
Mrs. Armstrong thanked her and turned back to Jeff.
"Who could have done this to our son?"
I'm not sure. He felt shame in lying to them, but a crowded funeral parlor was no place for full disclosure. "Nothing from the police yet?" Mr. Armstrong leaned toward them and pounded a thick fist into his meaty palm.
"The damn cops in this town. If that Wells guy wasn't so busy politicking all the time, maybe he'd actually get something done."
Jeff cringed and glanced back to Cindy, but she simply nodded in accord before advancing down the line. Her poise and grace impressed him, and he felt proud to have her by his side on such a difficult evening. "I'm gonna find out what happened," he told the Armstrongs. "I promise you Lionel didn't die in vain." Mr. Armstrong shook his hand and quietly thanked him before turning to the next guests in line. Jeff stopped before Randy and patted him comfortingly on the shoulder, recalling how Train would often chase his younger brother away when he tried to follow them on hurricane activities. That boyish enthusiasm was lost beneath his sullen eyes and crestfallen posture.
"I know you know who did this."
"We'll take care of it."
"I want to be a hurricane."
Jeff subtly shook his head. "You're too young."
"I'm 14 next week. Please."
"I said no. We'll take care of it. I promise." Randy sulked while Jeff wedged a finger under his collar, trying to loosen the tie that felt like a noose around his throat. He shook the boy's hand and finally stepped free of the receiving line, desperately scanning the crowded room for Cindy. He spotted her standing near the archway beside Shannon, conversing softly with a thin, graying man in a black suit. As Jeff stepped closer, she reached for him with a welcoming look in her eyes.
"There's someone I want you to meet."
Jeff felt his stomach churn as he eyed the stranger dressed in clergy attire with a silver crucifix pin upon his lapel, listening to Shannon speak.
"We just met last week,"
she told the man.
"He was going to take me out next week. Hard to believe he's gone. Just like that."
Cindy brushed the man's elbow to gain his attention.
"Jeff, this is Marty Jameson. He's the reverend at our church. He's conducting the service tomorrow morning."
The reverend turned about and extended a hand, his graying hair belying his youthful features.
"Jeff Hollister, I've heard so much about you. My deepest regrets for the loss of your friend."
Jeff shook his hand coolly. "Thanks for coming."
"I'm not always usually able to attend the viewing, but I felt a special connection tonight."
Jeff frowned quizzically as he withdrew his hand, but Cindy leaned in.
"Marty's a friend of the family. He officiated my parents' wedding."
20 years ago, next May, if I'm not mistaken."
The Reverend winked at her.
"I baptized Cindy, too."
Cindy cracked a nervous smile as Jeff patted the Reverend condescendingly on the shoulder. "Wow, that's fantastic. Listen, I'd love to hear more about Lollipop Land, Your Holiness, but my world's kind of falling apart right now, so if you'll excuse me." Jeff started away, But the Reverend furrowed his brow and recited from memory,
"The foolish man built his house in the sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash."
Jeff stopped and turned about. "Spare me the sermon, Rev. I had a lifetime's worth when my daddy died." Shannon stood with her mouth agape, but the Reverend's stoic face displayed no offense from the remark. Jeff turned about and strode indignantly through the archway out of the viewing room, but Cindy hurried after him. She grabbed his arm at the top of the lounge staircase.
"That was rude,"
she scolded him.
"Marty Jameson is a good man. He deserves more respect than that."
Jeff jerked his arm away. "Is that what this is all about? Save the gang leader's soul?" He sauntered down a few steps before looking back. "Maybe some things just aren't worth saving." He continued down the carpeted steps while she rushed to the top of the staircase.
"Don't you believe that, Jeff Hollister,"
she cried before storming away toward the viewing room again. Jeff bristled as he plodded downstairs, clinging to a polished wooden railing leading him into the basement lounge. The stairs led him below the ceiling, where a spacious, low-lit room opened to his right. Mick stood beside a dormant fireplace, sucking on a cigarette like a drowning man, while Crazy Leg sat upon a padded chair beside him, waving the smoke away from his face. The other hurricane sat upon plush sofas and chairs scattered about the lounge, chatting quietly among the other mourners about the cozy room. TJ pointed a thumb toward the staircase.
"Jeff's here."
Denny waved.
"Hey, Jeff. Where's your girlfriend?"
Jeff stepped down onto the carpeted floor and flopped onto the nearest sofa beside Axel. "Ah, she's upstairs somewhere. I couldn't stand it up there anymore." Axel nodded.
"I can't believe all the idiots here tonight."
Jeff glanced around at the ensemble. "So, what's the hot topic down here?" Denny shrugged.
"Just talking about old times."
They all sat in silence for a moment, until finally Mick grinned.
"Remember how we used to camp out in Crazy Leg's backyard?"
"And go pool hopping at 2 a.m?
Brain added. Jeff smiled. "Down at the McNulty's pool?"
"Oh, they had the best pool in the world."
Crazy Legs laughed. Mick flicked his cigarette into the fireplace and patted Crazy Legs on the shoulder.
"You remember that time when old man McNulty woke up? And Train ripped your shorts off while you were climbing out of the pool?"
Denny laughed.
"You never ran so fast in your life."
The laughter rippled through the room and Jeff felt his anxiety ease a little. TJ grinned.
"What about that tree fort the tornadoes had?"
Brain held up an index finger.
"The impregnable tree fortress."
"What happened to it?"
Bumbles asked. Crazy Legs laughed.
"You should have seen this thing. It had camouflage branches and a ladder that rolled up into the fort and gun slots in the walls to shoot at you if you got too close."
Jeff nodded slowly. "It wasn't a bad fort. It showed some promise for the tornadoes." Mick shook his head with humorous remorse.
"Until they shot Train with that BB rifle."
Bumbles regarded the chuckling hurricanes with curiosity.
"What do you mean?"
"We caught Tattoo Phil and Rigatoni red-handed, egging a snot out of Kramer's house. We chased them through the woods all the way to the edge of Happy Jack's yard. Until we got to, what y'all call it?"
"The impregnable tree fortress,"
Brain repeated. Crazy Legs still sounded remotely irritated.
4 dozen eggs on the front of our house. My father had me scrubbing the siding for a week."
Mick continued.
"They beat us to the fort and rolled up their ladder and locked themselves inside. Next thing we know, we're getting plugged by BBs. You know how much those things hurt. We hit that fort with 100 rocks, but it never budged. So we started to back off."
"That's when Train got it in the ass,"
TJ cut in.
"They must have pumped that rifle up like 40 times. I couldn't believe the squeal that came out of his mouth when he got shot. I thought he stepped on a field mouse."
Jeff laughed for the first time in 3 days. "I never thought Train could hit soprano." Mick grinned.
"Yeah, then he got really pissed. He charged the fort in spite of the BBs, and he didn't stop until he was at the base of the tree.
The fort had one major flaw,
Denny told Bumbles.
The whole thing was supported by a 2x4 nailed to the tree trunk. It was just a glorified duck blind.
Not very impregnable at all,
Brain added. Mick nodded.
Train found this big rock and started beating on that 2x4 with it. The tornadoes kept mocking him and shooting at him whenever they could get a clean shot. Every once in a while, they'd get a piece of him, and he'd holler about it. But he kept beating at that board until he knocked the nails out of that tree. The whole contraption crashed to the ground with Tony and Phil inside. 20 feet splat.
The boys laughed heartily, joined by a handful of others eavesdropping on the tale. One by one, however, the Hurricanes seemed to remember the gravity of their situation, and they all turned to their leader, brooding on the sofa. Fucking BBs, Jeff muttered. He rose from the sofa and leaned back against the polished balusters of the staircase, peeling the strangulating necktie from his throat as the Hurricanes hung their heads in silence. Sitting idly, he watched as people ascended and descended the staircase behind him, until he spotted the hem of a black dress swirling about in a whirlwind of commotion at the top of the stairs. A pair of high heels rattled a few steps down the staircase, and Cindy craned beneath the ceiling to peer into the room below.
Jeff, come quickly,
she called out. The tone of her voice startled him, and he darted halfway up the staircase to meet her in the middle. What's the matter?
He's here,
she whispered urgently. Who?
Craig Matthews. He came right up to me and asked me where you were.
Craig Matthews is here,
Mick boomed as he strode toward the staircase. Jeff held up a palm. Easy, Mick. TJ and Denny rushed up behind Mick as he grasped the railing knob, ready to propel himself upward. Brain and Axel filed in behind them, while Crazy Legs and Bumbles grappled the balusters, trying to see upstairs. Everyone calm down, Jeff told them. We don't want trouble here. Just then, the tornado leader stepped through the doorway at the top of the stairs, dressed in a black coat and maroon slacks. He descended the three open steps behind Cindy before spotting the Hurricanes gathering below. His usual flippancy had vanished, and his voice quivered as he spoke.
Hey, Jeff.
Mick pointed a finger at him.
You got a lot of nerve showing up here.
Jeff braced his right hand against the staircase wall, gripping the railing as tightly as he could with his bandaged left hand. What do you want, Matthews?
I need to see you,
Craig answered hurriedly. TJ gnashed his teeth.
Yeah? Did you see Train on your way down here?
Craig kept his focus on Jeff.
We gotta talk.
Don't listen to him,
Mick shouted.
He's trying to humiliate us.
Shut up, Mick. I ain't talking to you.
Mick rushed upstairs to press his chest against Jeff's arm.
Don't tell me what to do.
Craig held up his hands defensively.
I didn't come here for a fight, Jeff.
Well, you're gonna get one,
Mick bellowed. He thrust a shoulder against Jeff's bracing arm, forcing his palm to slip from the wall and pinning him against the railing as the angry Hurricanes rushed past him. Cindy shrank behind Jeff for safety as Craig turned and bolted upstairs. Jeff waited against the railing until the last Hurricane had passed before starting after them, but Cindy stepped in his path and pressed her hand against his chest.
Don't go,
she pleaded. I'll be right back. He eased her aside and rushed up the staircase after his friends. On the main floor, he discovered the swath of destruction the Hurricanes had leveled upon the funeral parlor. Along the hallway to the left, a girl sat propped against the wall, nursing a twisted ankle inflicted by an apparent trampling. Around the corner, her companion lay flat on his back with his hands covering his face. A spilled plant littered the carpet with dark potting soil, and multiple pictures hung crooked on the wall. Several guests shouted at Jeff as he weaved a crooked course toward the entranceway, where a gathering crowd stretched their necks and gushed with conversation about why a reckless throng of boys had just sprinted out the front doors of the parlor. Jeff brushed past a pair of irritated ushers and jogged down the front walk into a light rain that had begun to fall. He found Denny and Brain on the lawn near the end of the sidewalk, but the rest of the gang was nowhere to be seen. "Where is everyone?" Brain pointed down the main road.
"That way, I guess. This is crazy."
Jeff nodded. "Look, if anyone comes back, tell them to stay out here. We've caused enough trouble for one night." He trotted across the parking lot to the street and found Mick slouched beneath a street lamp, with both hands buried in his pants pockets. Mick looked up at him before casting his head down again.
"I can't believe Craig had the balls to show up here. He's gonna pay. Mark my words."
Jeff peered down the road through the rain and darkness. "Where is he now?"
"He had a car waiting down the street. I couldn't keep up with these damn shoes on, but Crazy Legs went after him."
Mick kicked a rock out into the street.
"Nothing seemed to go our way anymore."
"Here comes Crazy Legs. We're leaving now."
"Fine by me."
Jeff gasped. "Crazy Legs, what happened?" Crazy Legs stepped beneath the streetlight and extended his arms to display the scope of the disaster. His crisp gray jacket was now smeared in mud, his pants dripping with water and clinging to his legs.
"Fell in a puddle."
Mick laughed, but Jeff saw little humor in the spectacle. "Head to the car. We're out of here. I gotta find Cindy." He returned to the parlor walkway and could see through the doors that the crowd had dispersed, but a lone figure in a black dress watched through the glass. He brushed past Brain again and started up the walkway, while Cindy pushed open the glass door and strode down the sidewalk to meet him. "We're leaving," he announced. She folded her arms across her chest.
"I'm gonna catch a ride home with Shannon."
He staggered back. "What? How come?" She dropped her hands to her hips.
"I'm just really embarrassed right now, Jeff. I'll call you tomorrow."
She turned and stormed back toward the parlor entrance. "Cindy, wait!" He started up the sidewalk as she slipped inside, but the two ushers blocked the front doors with squared shoulders and steely expressions. The bald usher addressed him coolly.
"Good evening, sir."
Jeff waved them off in disgust and turned back toward his friends meandering across the parking lot. A cold gust of wind cut through his jacket as he pulled his keys from his pocket and trudged after them, feeling cheated by no one in particular of an honest farewell for a loyal friend.